pulled the trigger. It took me a few days to piece together why he would do this, but it was a kindness, I've concluded, so Mom or I wouldn't come home and find him when we opened the garage. We listened to his voice and confirmed that it was Ty. He said,
"There's a dead person in the garage in the greenhouse on the corner of Nichols and 2nd Street. He killed himself."
That was it. He hung up. It was 12 minutes before the ambulance got there, they told us, but he was already gone. He didn't sound scared in the recording. He didn't sound sad. He was perfectly matter-of-fact about it. They took us into a back room where Ty's body was lying on a steel table with a sheet covering him up to the neck. We stood for a minute in a tight semicircle just looking at him. Dad in his suit and tie, then me, then Mom in her scrubs. The last time we were truly a family together. Then Mom stepped forward and laid shaking hands on Ty's chest, like maybe she could wake him, and when he didn't stir, she tipped her head back and a sound came out of her that was sheer pain, a mix of howl and wail that didn't even sound like her voice anymore, that didn't sound exactly human. I'm sure you heard it from where you were. Dad put his hand over his mouth and closed his eyes and stumbled back to a chair against the wall. The sound kept coming out of Mom, and it was unbearable in the way it filled my ears and my head and solidified everything. My brother was dead. Mom's knees gave out. I caught her before she hit the floor and dragged her to the chair next to Dad's, and she stopped howling and cried in breathless, ragged bursts. There was nowhere for me to sit next to them. All I could do was stand and stare at Ty. He looked like he was made of wax. One of his eyes was coming open. He had beautiful eyelashes, thick and dark and curved just right, and between the seam of lashes there was a sliver of pale gray, like dirty snow. His lips were almost black. This was before you saw him, before the makeup and the formal clothes and the stiff, folded hands. There was a smear of blood on his neck, disappearing under the sheet. I was struck with the urge to pull back the sheet and see the wound that killed him, something that would explain this terrible mystery of him being this empty thing when I'd just seen him 12 hours earlier at the breakfast table, and he was fine. I would have looked, but Mom and Dad were there. I backed away and stood by Mom and held her hand and cried with her until we both ran dry. I can't cry anymore. I think that part of myself is broken. When it came time to leave, Mom didn't want to go. She would have stayed with Ty all night, all day, until we buried him. But they made her go back into Jane's office to sign some papers and talk about the next steps in the process of losing her child. You were still waiting in the hall. You stood up when I opened the door. Your eyes said you believed it now. That's when I remembered the text. I took the phone out of my pocket and checked, and it was still there. "Hey, sis, can you talk?" Ice washed over me. Dread. Numbness. I shoved the phone back into my pocket. I looked up at you. I thought, this is your fault. If you hadn't kissed me, if you hadn't distracted me, if I hadn't been so tangled up in the emotions I felt for you, the impractical emotions, I would have answered the text. I would have stopped this. I didn't stop this. And I thought again, it's your fault. I thought, I wish time travel was a viable option. If I could make a time machine, I would go back to that moment and I would answer that text. I'd save him. I understand now that nobody could have saved Ty but Ty. There's no one else to blame. Not you, not me. Ty was holding all the cards. I understand this now with my head. My heart still wishes for the time machine. I will have to make my heart forgive us for that night. I can forgive you so much more easily than I can forgive myself. And there's so much I would ask you to forgive me for. For shutting you out. For the way I stopped talking to you. For the absolutely stupid reason I gave as to why I wanted to break up. I didn't break up with you because of your sperm, or because it wasn't working between us, because it was working. It worked. You deserve the truth. Whether you choose to forgive me or not, you deserve to know that I meant it, what I said that night. I love you. I tried really hard not to. You have no idea how hard I tried. Or maybe you do have some idea. But I love you. If you don't know what to do with this information, that's okay. I just want to tell you everything, if you want to hear it, if you want to know. I'll start with this. 36. When I come out of Damien's house, Seth is sitting on the porch step smoking a cigarette.
Is everything all right with the kid? He asks.
Yeah, he's going to be okay.
Good,
he says with genuine relief.
I was about to come in and get you. I have to go. I'm late for work.
You should go, I tell him.
You going to need a ride anywhere?
I clutch my backpack to my chest. I can get a ride. Thank you, Seth, really. Thank you.
No sweat.
He takes a long drag.
I'll call you if I ever need to pick a lock. Damn.
I laugh and take the cigarette out of his mouth and step on it.
What the hell?
I'm trying to keep everyone from killing themselves today, I explain. He snorts and gives me a half-irritated smirk. Then he gets on the motorcycle, puts his helmet on, and starts up Georgia with a roar. I wave as he speeds away. I can't believe I rode that thing. I get out my cell. Mom won't be off work for another hour. I take a deep breath and dial another number. Hey, Dad, I say when he answers. Can you come get me? Everything's okay, I'm fine, but I need a ride. Dad pulls up to Steven's house and puts the car in park. We both peer out from the windshield for a minute. The Blake's house is a white two-story farmhouse with a big wraparound porch, like a well-maintained and well-loved version of Damien's house. All the lights are on. The windows are bright, and the house looks warm. Steven is lucky to live in that house with his mom and his dad and his sisters, all under that roof. I try very hard not to resent him for that. I ring the bell. Sarah answers. I can tell by the look on her face that she's not sure what she thinks of me being here right now. Is Steven home? I ask. She pushes the door open and steps aside to allow me to come in. Steven! She yells as she stalks off. Someone to see you! My heart starts going fast when he appears at the end of the hall. For roughly 2.5 seconds, I almost chicken out.
Hi, he says softly. How's Damien? I've been so worried all day, but I figured you would have called if...
Damien's all right. False alarm. Steven lets out a breath.
Good. Phew, good.
He tilts his head to one side, confused now as to why I'm here, and looks at me hard, before seeming to decide something.
Do you want to have dinner with us? We just sat down.
Oh, thanks, but no. My dad's waiting for me in the car.
Your dad?
I just stopped by to give you this. I hand him the journal. He looks at me blankly.
Should I know what...
No. It's an experiment of sorts. It started out as an assignment from my therapist. I find that I can't look directly at him when he's holding the journal. I want you to read it. I mean, if you want to read it, you don't have to. Dave, my therapist, he said that I needed a recipient for my writing, like an audience. And tonight I figured out, I've concluded, that my recipient is you. If you want to read it. If you don't, I get that and I can take it.
I'll read it,
he says, taking a step back like I might make a grab for it. I think, oh, dear God, what have I done? Good, I say, backing toward the door. Have a nice night. Dad drives me home. He doesn't ask questions, which I appreciate. When I get to the front door, Mom comes out to meet me. She looks a little bit freaked out. She watches Dad drive off without comment.
Do I want to know? She asks.
No. Is there anything to eat? I'm starved. She finds us a box of macaroni and cheese, which she makes on the stove, and then cuts some hot dogs into. I feel about 5 years old when I'm eating it, but I wolf it down. Mom watches me until I finish. Are you all right, Lexi? She reaches across the table and grabs my hand. Do you want to talk about it? I'm here for you, sweetie. I know things have been hard, but I'm here for you. I will always be here for you. I squeeze her hand. I know you are. I take a deep breath. I was at Damien's house this afternoon. He was one of Ty's friends. Yes, I know Damien, she says. Did you know he put the most beautiful paper rose into your brother's coffin? I've never seen anything quite like it. Wow, the things I did not know that would have been so helpful. Anyway, I thought that Damien might be feeling like Ty and Patrick, and that he might need my help. But then it turned out that he helped me. She nods. Funny how that works. I'm sorry for how I've been. She blinks at me, startled. How you've been? There's nothing wrong with how you've been. You've been getting by the best you can. Well, I'm sorry for how I acted in the car on the way home from Graceland. That was not okay. You said what I needed to hear, she says. I'm glad you did. It woke me up to what I was doing to you while I was paying so much more attention to myself. Mom, I kept feeling your brother near me, she says with a sigh, looking down into her lap. Sometimes I would smell him, or I would hear his footsteps on the stairs, and I was trying to drink it away, Lex, and I'm sorry for that. I won't do it again. Okay. About a week ago, I was driving back from work, she says, and I felt this presence with me, in the car. Uh-oh. Ghost in the car. Never a good thing. I was crying, the way I do sometimes, and then I just felt it so strongly that someone was there with me. She shakes her head like she still can't believe it. And then what? I prompt. Then I heard the voice. I stare at her. And what did Ty say? She glances up at me, startled. It wasn't Tyler, sweetie. It wasn't? I'm confused now. It was another voice, and it said, "Will you put your son in my hands?" I swallow, hard. Mom. And I said yes, she murmurs. She lowers her head again, but she's not crying. I said yes. She takes a deep breath, the kind of breath you take when a weight has suddenly been lifted from your shoulders. I haven't felt Ty since then, she tells me. I put my hand over hers. It has been one crazy day. The doorbell rings. Mom and I glance at each other. I'll get it, I say. I go to the door and open it. On the other side is Stephen, the journal in his hand. He looks thrashed, red-eyed and bleary, and his hair in the front is all poofed up like he's been tugging on it. Stephen's a fast reader. I'd forgotten that. Hi, I whisper. He's crying. He lunges through the door and folds me into his arms, crying.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, he says, and sobs into my hair.
Something inside me fractures, breaks. I'm sorry, too, I say, and I'm crying then, finally, like the floodgates have opened, and we're clinging to each other, weeping, as the water pours down and down. 37. In the dream, this last dream, I'm playing solitaire in a dark room. It's like an interrogation scene from a movie, a small card table and two chairs, a dim, overhanging light. I am comfortable here. I turn the cards over one by one, not making sense of them. Sometimes I see them as little yellow post-its. I keep turning the cards over, a king of hearts, an ace of spades, and then the note to my mother. Sorry, Mom, but I was below empty. I lay this card in the discard pile. Then Ty is there, on the outside edge of the light. How did you get in here? I ask.
I don't know. It's your dream, you tell me.
He sits in the chair across from me. He doesn't look like a ghost. He seems real. He even looks taller to me, and older, like he's aged during the time he's been gone. He is not quite the Ty I knew.
"Do you remember how to play war?" he asks.
I give him a look like, oh, please.
"You always cheated," he says.
"Did not."
"Did."
I hand him the cards. I watch his long fingers shuffle them easily. He divides the deck into two even piles and gives one to me. Then we begin to lay cards down in threes to fight each other. Higher numbers beat lower. Jack of spades beats nine of diamonds. Five of hearts beats two of spades. Aces beat all. The goal, to win the entire deck.
"What do I get if I win?" he asks suddenly.
He has just taken three of my cards.
"What do you want?"
"I think," he says without emotion,
"that if I win, you have to stop watching me die. It's a little morbid."
He takes three more of my cards.
"So what do you want?" he asks, "if you win."
I stare into his hazel eyes. I want to answer that text in time, I think. I want to save you. But underneath it all is, I want to have a chance to say goodbye. I never got to say goodbye. You didn't give me that. He exhales a laugh.
"Okay, deal. If you win, you can say goodbye."
This seems unlikely. He's winning the game. He has most of the deck. I know it will be over soon, and I am terrified to wake up and never see him again, never be able to talk to him. Ty?
"The people we love are never truly gone," he says. "Haven't you learned that?"
Oh, don't tell me you listen to Dave. He looks at me steadily and takes another set of my cards.
"You did say goodbye to me, you know. Don't you remember?"
"What?"
"That morning. You said, 'Come on, I was going to miss the bus.' I said one of my friends was going to give me a ride."
"Which was a lie," I add.
"Yes, it was," he admits. "But then you said, 'Okay, see you later.' And I said, 'Love you, sis.' And you said, 'Love you too, bro. Bye.'"
"I said that?"
"You said that."
I remember. I remember. And as I sit there, remembering that small, single moment in time, I'm suddenly flooded with other memories of Ty. Good memories. So many good memories. Building my first snowman in that front yard with Ty, helping Mom in the garden. Ty trying to eat corn on the cob without the benefit of his two front teeth. Raking leaves with Ty. Teaching him how to drive. Clinging to his arm when we secretly rented Jurassic Park when I was 12. The funny way he laughed. The time he tried to cut his own hair. The male man. The time when I was 4 and I dressed him up in my old clothes and put a wig on him and walked him around the neighborhood introducing him as my new sister Vicky. The way every year on the first day of school, Mom had us stand in the same spot on the front porch and she took our picture together, holding hands, year after year after year. My first day of kindergarten, when he clung to my hand and wouldn't let go when I tried to go off to school without him. "Take me with you," he begged. "I can't. You have to stay," I said. "But I promise I'll come back, and then we'll play."
"See?" he says now.
I say, "I miss you. I will always miss you."
"I miss you too," he says, "for what it's worth."
I lay down a king of clubs, which he takes with an ace, and a 10 of diamonds, which he beats with his jack of hearts. I only have one card left. "Bye, Ty," I whisper. He smiles and turns his card over. This is Julia Whalen. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Last Time We Say Goodbye by Cynthia Hand. This program was produced by Mind's Eye Productions. The director was William DeFries. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Cynthia Hand. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.